Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
Good morning. It's 8:13 at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson. Our second hour of Galesburg Live is on this Saturday morning. I'm Will Stevenson, again with Galesburg's Evening News, weeknights from 5 to 6 p.m. We have conversations just like this one every night, except they're significantly shorter, so tune in for that, weeknights 5 to 6, and I sure thank you in advance for that. And I thank Ken Springer, the president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development, for joining us here this hour. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Glad to have you. You're a busy guy these days, aren't you?
Yep, that's safe to say.
How long have you been doing this now? The mayor helped get this form of economic development going a couple of years ago now, right?
Right. So economic development was reorganized in 2014, and they brought me in to run the new organization. It was December of 14. And prior to that, I spent 9 years with Bloomington Normal's Economic Development Council.
You know, I was going to ask you about that, knowing that you were with almost doing the same sort of thing in Bloomington Normal. How different is it kind of doing economic development for an area like this versus a Bloomington Normal type area? It's obviously bigger, larger population, that sort of thing. But are there other differences, or does it all kind of end up being the same at the end?
Yeah, actually, it's actually a completely different style of economic development here versus Bloomington Normal. I mean, if you think about economic development as an industry, there's really two different styles. There's the sales aspect of it, which is what most people are most familiar with, and that's going out and finding companies, bringing them in, helping companies expand, the transactional deal side of things. The other side of economic development is what I call the product development side, and that's building competitive assets in your community to make your community able to go out and compete with other cities from around the country and around the world. And so the job in Bloomington Normal was mostly a sales job. I mean, Bloomington Normal really had their asset base kind of lined up. They knew what they were selling. And it was just going out and finding companies. That's what that job entails. Here, it's a little bit different. We're trying to reorient the area economy kind of away from what was traditionally the large employment base, legacy manufacturing, right? Everybody knows, you know, the story with Galesburg and manufacturing. And so really what we're trying to do with this organization is find ways to make Galesburg and Knox County competitive, find new industries that are going to in turn create new employment for us.
So really, it's sort of kind of reimagining economic development in a post-Maytag world, I guess.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it.
Okay. I was curious. I was thinking this morning, knowing that you had worked in Bloomington Normal before coming here, what's your take on that, the big news there with the people at the former U.S. Cellular Coliseum basically skimming money from the organization, if you will. From one standpoint, that can be a big economic development driver, I imagine. But on the other hand, they sounds like they were almost trying to get away with murder, for lack of a better term.
That whole situation is really unfortunate. So the Coliseum, when it was built with public funds, and that actually was built right before I moved to Bloomington Normal.
Yeah.
But it was a controversial thing from the start. And I think one of the mistakes that was made early on was the city kind of sold that to the populace, saying, you know, this thing's going to make money. It's going to be a revenue generator for the community. And anybody knows anything about, you know, small arenas and public performance spaces knows that it's more of a cultural good that you're going to have to subsidize it somewhat.
So it's going to be a loss leader no matter what you do. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it drives people downtown. It does has all of these positive effects, but you know, is it paying for itself? I don't know that was ever gonna materialize. So then, when you have this issue, which recently propped up, and anybody hasn't been following the story, the management company that was managing the public arena has been indicted on fraud allegations for skimming funds, and that's all going to head to court soon. But anyway, it was kind of like the worst possible thing that could happen, because there's already a bad taste in the mouth on a lot of residents in that community over the promises that were made when the arena was built. And then now you have this mismanagement allegations on top of that. It's just, there's not a lot of positives out of it. And
yeah. And on top of that, I think that sort of distrust has moved from, you know, people not believing that this is going to end up paying for itself to, you know, there were safeguards in place, or at least in terms of oversight from government that weren't really followed through on.
Yeah, and I haven't dug too deep into, you know, the finger pointing, which I assume is running rampant right now in the media there. But yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, the whole intent behind, you know, cities building big facilities like that are to drive tourism, to drive visits to the downtown area. There's plenty of spin-off effects that can be created by that, but it's got to be run clean. It's got to be run smart. And obviously you can't have, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse, you know, ruining it. So
I imagine, though, as much as we know that those types of venues don't necessarily pay for themselves, if you're selling the public, though, on a taxpayer funded project like this, you almost have to say, don't you, that we're going to try to get your money back.
Yeah, and the other thing I didn't mention is right before the council decided to build the Coliseum, they did a public referendum. And it was voted down by residents, like by a 2-to-1 margin.
Oh, what could possibly go wrong? So anyway,
the council went ahead and built it anyway. And not exactly the greatest situation. But you know, having again spent a ton of time in that community and a lot of time at that arena, at going to hockey games and such. It's a beautiful facility.
Oh,
so
it is.
You know, and it's not going to go away. They're going to find somebody to manage it smartly, and it will be an asset for the community. But you know, case in point out there to any. You know, prospective city managers that are listening to this broadcast, don't try to sell a sports arena as a moneymaker for your community.
On the other hand, if you're listening to this and wanting to be a city manager, don't try this at home. Circling back then to Galesburg, can having, you know, venues like, say, the Orpheum Theater with its rich history and all the work that's gone into that, and other venues, and, you know, having the Knox Colleges of the World, how much of those things are a factor when you're trying to sell a city or locating in a city to a potential developer?
There are obviously assets, fantastic cultural assets. Orpheum is such an amazing venue to have in a community. Knox College, hugely important. I would say it depends on the type of project we're working on.
Yeah.
You know, if we're working on a mid-sized relocation where the management are going to actually live in the community, then you bet your boots. When we're driving them around for the first time, we're showing them every cultural amenity. You know, we're taking them by Prairie Players, we're taking them down Seminary Street. You know, we're showing them everything that we possibly can, because they're going to be living in the community. However, if it's a branch location that's being opened, the decisions being made, you know, five states away and being made by people that are not here on the ground, it may not be as impactful. But overall, I mean, you have to look at economic development as almost a reflection of the overall health of your community, right? Everything that you can, every factor you can think about in your community, you know, your housing, your cultural amenities, you know, your arts, you know, crime rate, all this stuff. If you have to take it in total, and that is a reflection of economic development and vice versa. So it's not, a lot of people think economic development is this isolated thing that it just works. You know, you flip a light switch and it just works. But really, everything else has to be working well in your community in order to enhance economic development, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And before I take a break here, what ultimately attracted you to this job in Galesburg?
What really attracted me, I'm being completely honest with this. I came in for the interview, and I felt that I really clicked with the leadership for the organization. I was interviewed by the entire board of what became the Knox County Area Partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody understood that we were looking at an uphill climb. We were looking at a reimagining of this economy and the commitment to doing that over a course of years. What I was worried about was coming in and finding somebody to, you know, say, Ken, we're hiring you to bring Maytag back. And I'm like, that's not a possibility with what's happening in the economy right now. So
I think the public thinks, and perhaps wrongfully so, or at least some aspects of the public think, that maybe you were hired to bring Maytag back. Do you run into that?
I do. That's like kind of the silver bullet, you know, moonshot style economic development. And that's just not a reality these days. I think that we have to look at rebuilding this economy piece by piece, small and medium sized projects, taking bites out of the apple. And doing so over a sustained period of time, as opposed to looking for some, you know, Hail Mary that's going to magically replace what was lost when Maytag left. I just don't think that's realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's much more fundamentally sound to build block by block.
Let's talk a little bit more about that after this break we need to take here. We're talking with Ken Springer, the president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development. It is 8:23. More of Galesburg Live next on 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. Good morning.
If a question comes to mind while we talk to our expert, call us at 342-9194 or email it to WGIL@WGIL.com. Ask the expert during Galesburg Live on WGIL.
Eight 26 at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson with Galesburg Live, talking with Ken Springer, president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development. We were talking before the break, Ken, about, and you, I know you've run into or at least heard about a lot of people that, at least if my evening program is any indication and some of the questions we put forward, at least on social media, people that still say that we need a big manufacturer or some sort of job or some sort of group of jobs that a lot of people can have or at least apply for or something like that. But and you say, and I think we've said time and time again over the years, that sort of manufacturing type of thing isn't going to happen. But on the other hand, that doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't try to pursue manufacturers or employers like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, we go after anything that moves, honestly. We're aggressive in going after everything. But when I say the odds of finding that 2,000 employee operation that's looking to locate, just to give some numbers for folks out there that are listening. So on average, there's less than 200 of those projects each year that kind of go around the economic development world. These are, when I say those types of projects, I'm talking major relocations that are looking in multiple different states. Okay, so there's 200 on average. Okay, depends on how the economy is doing, but that's kind of a round number to go off of. You know, for comparison purposes, there are 11,000 different economic development organizations in the United States vying for those 200 projects.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah. So, So if you just for comparison purposes too, so there's about 5,500 Taco Bells in the United States. So there's about two times as many economic development organizations as there are Taco Bells. So the competition is pretty stiff. Yeah. And the other, you know, there's other things that go into it. I mean, I don't really want to go down this route too much, but the state of Illinois right now is not being very conducive for attracting projects. Yeah. We're lacking a lot of the political stability that a major project like that is going to look for.
I wanted to ask you about that a little. Is it the political stability, or is it what the governor always claims, that the state is just almost by nature business unfriendly?
You know, it's a little bit of both. I mean, you know, there's tangible things that we look at in economic development. You know, we look at our toolbox as a state. You know, we're lacking a lot of the same incentive programs that our neighbors have. Which wasn't always the case. You know, 30 years ago, Illinois was a state leader in economic development. In fact, mm-hmm. a lot of the programs that Illinois created in the 1980s ended up being standard portfolio for our neighboring states. But the problem is, a lot of our neighboring states have continued to evolve what they're doing with economic development, and we're still kind of rocking the same playbook that we've been having for a number of years. So that's one challenge. But two, I mean, really the big thing is the stability. I mean, if you look at these major projects, these people are making billion-dollar decisions for their companies, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, these things are like make or break decisions for the stockholders. And if you look at the chaos that we've had in Illinois, you look at, you know, things like business climate, you look at taxes, you look at what might happen with wages. There's a lot of question marks that I don't think any of us can say we know what the answers to those questions are going to be, mm-hmm. you know, 5 to 10 years from now. And that's what we mean when we say the uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen. We could have a new government that comes into power at the state level that can completely change things, completely upend the apple cart. So that's what we mean by uncertainty. And so that definitely is a knock against us. Now, it's not stopping us locally. I think locally we say, fine, I can't control what's happening at the state level. I can control what happens locally here in Knox County. Or we as citizens of Knox County can kind of control our own destiny. But that's part of what's driving us to look for more of the small and mid-sized projects, is because they're not going to be as affected by that state level, and particularly if we're working as an economic development organization with local businesses that are already here that are looking to expand. They're already in the state of Illinois. We don't have to cross that bridge with them.
Yeah.
We kind of work with what's here, kind of garden our own backyard, and that's really what's keeping us very busy in economic development these days.
I was going to ask you, how much does it realistically come up when you meet with a developer the either the dysfunctionality of Illinois government or the tax structure, let's say. Does that come up a lot, or does that not come up maybe as much as I might think it would?
It doesn't come up as much as you might think it was, but it is a factor in the sense that when a major project is looking to locate, they're gonna contract with a professional called a site selector. Site selectors are private consultants that work with companies to decide where these projects go, right? Mm-hmm. Site selectors will preemptively cross certain states off their list for various criteria. And so, unfortunately, what's happened is we're just not hearing from site selectors because they've already crossed Illinois off their list. And if you go, you can go talk, and there's a huge number of site selectors in Chicago. You can go talk to them, and they'll just tell you flat out. They say, "Yeah, we're actually, we're steering projects away from Illinois right now because of all these different factors." Mm. And so, what we at the local level,
so you don't even get the chance even to try to change their minds.
Exactly, we don't even get the call. That's the challenge, and so that's part of the reason why again, all that stuff's out of our control. Like locally here, I cannot affect what happens in Springfield. So yeah. we work with the opportunities that we have, and when we see that is people starting businesses up for the first time, and we look for local businesses that have opportunities to expand and enter into new markets, and helping them with that kind of growth. And fortunately, we've had enough activity in those sectors to really keep us busy. Now, that's not to say that we're not out there, still doing what we can to promote the community outside.
Sure.
We have had some success bringing companies in. So we're just trying to take every possible opportunity that we can. If we find out somebody's looking, we're going to go after them. So
I'm past time where I need to take a break, but I want to – no, it's not your fault. It's totally mine, but I want to maybe shift our discussion after the break. But before I do, let me just ask you real quickly in maybe a minute or two or less, how do you sell the public on what you're doing versus – I think those of us with long memories know that the previous economic development entity was not very good, I guess, in most people's eyes. How do you tell people that you're different?
Well, I think,
and how do you stop some of that? Pervasive negativity that maybe goes along with some of that.
I'm a realist and I'm pragmatic, and I think the key thing that I tell people is we did not get in this situation overnight.
Yeah.
Right. It took 30 plus years for our community to get where we are today. I think anybody that's looking for a quick fix or for an immediate turnaround, what I say to them is it took us 30 years to get here. It's probably going to take us almost as long to get back. We've got to start taking bites out of this apple. We got to start making investments today that are going to pay off 5-10 years down the road if we're ever going to get out of this. I'm not here to do moonshots. I'm here to do reasonable, pragmatic and accumulating economic development over a period of time.
When we come back, we'll maybe try to touch on some of the things or efforts you may be working on now and some initiatives that I think might, if you will, launch the next generation of economic developers, if you will. We're talking with Ken Springer of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development. He's the president of said organization. We'll shift the discussion following a check of local news headlines with Cameron at 8:34 as Galesburg Live continues on WGIL.
Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
8:38 on WGIL as Galesburg Live continues. Ken Springer, the president at the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development, is my guest. I probably shouldn't say this, but I think on the air, I imagine you probably get as much maybe grief from the public sometimes as much as those of us in radio do, but in a different way, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is an industry that affects everybody, and and that's part of the gig. I mean, it's definitely a high stress industry, but what we do is important. And so, yeah, you know, we get feedback from all corners of the community, and it's important to do that. So,
is there a sort of a normal day at the office for you,
no.
Does it vary as much as I think?
No.
Yeah.
No, and that's one of the things that's really attractive about economic development. What I really love about it is, 8 a.m. I could be talking with a startup that wants to, open a barber shop or something like that. And then an hour later, I'm going through a factory that's producing some very highly technical, manufacturing components. And then, the next hour, I'm talking with a prospect in a completely different industry. And what you have to do to be an effective economic developer is you have to be able to speak other people's languages and learn those languages very quickly. There's a different set of things that the barbershop's going to be concerned about versus the manufacturer versus the other types of prospects, and being able to rapidly shift gears and communicate across industries, I think, is one of the things that makes people successful in economic development.
Let's talk a little bit about things you may be working on right now. I know a lot of it is sort of what you do is sort of confidential or and that sorts of things, but. Is there an example of something that you can tell me you're working on or trying to convince somebody to locate to the Galesburg area for right now?
Yeah.
Tell me you're working on something that people will rest easy on and know that, hey, we might get this type of employer at some point.
Yeah, we at this point, our pipeline of projects and clients are very deep, and I'm really happy to say that. The absolute worst position you can be in as an economic developer is if your pipeline's empty and nobody will call you back. And we're kind of the exact opposite. We're our pipeline's full and the phone keeps ringing, and that's really, really good. But the key to understand is that each client that we work with, each project that we work on is kind of like an at-bat, and not every at-bat results in a home run. Mm-hmm. So we got to take a lot of swings at the plate before we'll bring a project to close. And so for us, having a large number of at-bats, having a pipeline full of projects is very important to us. We're working, right now, I mean, it's kind of across the board. We've got some startups that we're working with. There's a couple existing companies that are looking to expand that we're working with. Those are already located here. And we've got four or five active recruitment projects that we're working on right now. I mean, and again, some of them are long shots, some of them are closer, but the fact of the matter is I'm when I find myself wishing that there were more hours in the day to get more of this work done, that's generally a good thing. And, and so I'm very optimistic right now. I think our what we've been seeing activity wise has been really good for about the last year. We had a little lull around the start of the very beginning of this year, but it picked back up in the spring and it's been solid since then.
Anything close to finalization?
Nothing that I can talk about.
Oh,
you know how that is.
You and me here. No, I'm kidding.
I don't know if you've ever had to sign NDAs or anything like that, but we get economic developers, we get beat up pretty bad.
Radio's full of those things.
Sued if we drop names too soon. So no, I won't mention any names, but no, we're doing very good. And when I say we, I'm talking not just about myself, but we have a staff at KCAP, Kyle Kelly and Kate Reese are our two employees, and we all got our hands full, and that's actually really cool.
I would say, and just to know that you've been pretty busy the last year or so must be pretty gratifying, even if a lot of those things maybe don't come to fruition in a way that you would like. Just like you said, just the fact that that people keep knocking on the door is a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and the other thing that's really good is we deliberately are trying to position our organization so that we have connections with folks in the site selecting community and with other influencers that might be the sources of future projects. And we've made a deliberate attempt at KCAP to get on these people's radars. And that's actually paying off. We're starting to see leads come back from the people that we've done outreach to, and that's exactly what we wanted to see happen. So,
and just kind of going back to what we were talking about before the break, just getting on these people's radars is job one, more or less.
Absolutely, they need to know who your community is. What your community's key assets are, what industries you're targeting. That's really important for site selectors to know, and it's important to build relationships with them over the years. And so, fortunately, we're close enough to one of the big hives of corporate site selectors in the country, and that's the Chicago market. There's a bunch of these folks up in Chicago. And so, yeah, KCAP, we go up there every now and then and try to get some FaceTime with these folks and you know, make sure that they know who we are and what we have to offer.
Something like what's been in the news lately with Chicago and, to a point, Illinois perhaps trying to lure the next great Amazon headquarters to that area, although the governor has said he'd like to see it either in Chicago or St. Louis. But does something like that, from either a residual effect standpoint, if that were to happen, does that help a place like here, or is that too far away from a geographic standpoint?
I think it would be beneficial to the entire state to have that huge Amazon project located. As far as can I quantify that? I don't know if I can quantify that, but you know, anytime you're talking a project that size, you're talking about 50,000 jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, and not only that, but there's a certain prestige that comes with, you know, having one of these capital companies locate an HQ in your state, particularly in the field of IT, which is what Amazon would be.
Yeah.
You know, IT is kind of the gold standard of job types right now, and communities are very, very aggressively looking for tech workers and skilled workers. And so for that to land in Chicago or St. Louis, I think would be beneficial, definitely to the state. As far as, is it going to create jobs in Galesburg, Knox County? Yeah, probably not. But I don't think we need to have the adversarial relationship with Chicago. That I think that if Chicago's doing well, it ultimately benefits us, as long as Chicago's not coming and, you know, picking our pocket and taking our companies away from us. So
it's funny, on one hand, sometimes people will talk bad about Chicago being a part of Illinois, but on the other hand, hey, let's go to Chicago and see a Cubs game.
Sure. Yeah. The question is, you know, does a strong Chicago harm the state of Illinois? I don't think so.
No.
I think that, you know, we obviously have regional divisions. There's obviously things that we care about downstate that maybe the folks in Chicago don't care about, and vice versa. But I certainly don't want to see Chicago fail, or
yeah,
St. Louis. I think, you know, we want a strong Midwest. We want a strong region. And this Amazon project would be sweet if either of those two cities were able to get it.
In terms of there may be still being, for lack of a better term, reminders of the last economic development entity that was here, GRETA, the former Galesburg Regional Economic Development Association. There's that pesky property that I pass by on my way to work every day that was at one point being marketed as a potential logistics park. Is that still in play? That just seems to almost be, the longer that goes on and is undeveloped but is available, that just seems like an awfully sore thumb, I guess.
It's definitely a sore spot in the community. I mean, that's probably the property I get asked about the most when I'm out doing community events. Mm-hmm. It used to be the Maytag property, but we were fortunate to find a user for that last year.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, nothing against Greta at all. I think that Greta, you know, and admittedly, I haven't gone too far into the history. I haven't really looked at what they were doing,
because, yeah, honestly, don't bother.
For me, it was a clean start. You know, I know they're good people, and they have the best intentions for this community. And so I won't make any comments on that. But, you know, I think the logistics park is actually it's an important tool in Galesburg's toolbox, really. You have a
meeting after all this time?
After all this, yeah. I mean, look, again, this is, we got to understand, we got to have the right expectations for this. You don't buy a piece of property and expect it to sell overnight. It's just not the way it works. Having that in our toolbox, that's municipally controlled mega site, is actually the term that we would use in economic development. Mega site with public infrastructure already in, we can kind of control the price on that if we're offering it. That's an important thing. It's got access to 74. It's got a BNSF rail line running around the south end of the property. It's a good piece of property. I'm glad that we have that, because that gives me something to go out and market. You know, are we paying a lot of attention to it at KCAP? Yeah, actually, it's the piece of property that we're trying to push the hardest, because we understand that it is a sore spot in the community, and we're out there really, really shoving it down people's throats to not to put too fine a point on it. But no, it's a good property. You know, that's one of the things. I didn't have that. I didn't have anything like that in Bloomington Normal. You know, we had lots of development ground around the community, but it was all privately controlled. There's a big difference between having control over the price of a property, because then you don't – we'll have to worry about a landowner, you know, getting wind that you have a client looking at your project and you know, jacking the price up on the property. And so it's an important piece in our toolbox.
It sounds like it's saying that it might almost be easier to market something like that versus a versus like, say, an open piece of land that the old Mitsubishi plant or something like that in Bloomington Normal.
Even though
that plant is back in use in a small way right now,
isn't it? It's about to go back into use. Yeah. It's been purchased. The Mitsubishi plant has been purchased. But no, Logistics Park, you know, it's there's some public infrastructure into it. It's pretty close to being shovel ready. In fact, we're working on it kind of in the back end and KCAP to do things to make it even more shovel ready than it currently is.
Okay.
But no, I mean, I recently, just a couple of weeks ago, I had somebody, you know, tug on my sleeve and ask, you know, if the city would be willing to sell that back for an ag use. And I said, no way. That's like one of the best tools that we have in our toolbox. That gives us something to market. If we don't have that, then what? You know, it makes it more difficult for us to bring a big project in. So
I've talked about that longer than I intended to. We need to take one more break, and then we'll talk about you're starting a program that I've seen work really well in other communities that we'll talk about when we come back. It's 8:50. We're talking with Ken Springer of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development.
Tune in for Fighting Illini football as Illinois takes on Rutgers. Pre-game coverage begins at 10 o'clock.
Follow the Illini all season long on WGIL.
It's 8:55 coming up now on Galesburg Live on WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson with Ken Springer, president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development. Before we wrap up, and we have a few minutes left, Ken, on the other end of economic development, you're working on something that I think is really going to, you know, spark and create interest in economic development in future generations. And I saw a program like this work in Springfield, the last couple of years I worked there before coming back. This CEO initiative in other parts of the state is really sort of taken off, and it's high time it came here, right?
Absolutely, yeah. We're very pleased at the Knox County Area Partnership in partnership with the Galesburg Community Foundation to be bringing a program called CEO to the Knox County area. And what CEO is, it's a we didn't create it. It's a program that was created in Effingham, Illinois. But it's a once-a-day, 90-minute class for high school juniors and seniors where all the students in the CEO class learn how and actually launch their own for-profit business. And so the class meets every day off-site. So it's actually taught by a business professional. They meet off campus. They have to dress. The students have to dress business. And over the course of the year, each student forms their own business classroom. They could be doing things like learning how to put together financials or learning how to put together a marketing plan for their business. And that's balanced with going out in the community and going through and touring area businesses, being mentored one-on-one with area business leaders, having guest speakers come in, such that at the end of the school year, every one of these students is going to have a really strong professional network in the area, and they're going to have a cash-generating for-profit business that they can choose to either continue running or they can, you know, do whatever they want to do with it. So the program itself, as I mentioned, is created by a group in Effingham, Illinois right now. It's in 40 different cities, 6 different states. It's really taking off.
Yeah.
And it's been extremely successful everywhere it's been tried. So our program is going to launch fall of 18.
Okay.
And it's going to be open to students at any of the 5 high schools in Knox County. And the really cool thing is that the partnership in conjunction with the Galesburg Community Foundation, we're actually delivering this to the school districts for free.
Wow.
We are raising the money for this on our own and delivering it at zero cost to the school districts. So we think it's a really, really important program for planting the seeds of the future, really deliberately creating a next generation of business professionals for our area.
And it really seems like it just goes beyond just, you know, teaching those essentials about business, right? This is almost, you know, life skills too.
Absolutely. Communication is such a huge part of it. It's incredible. If you actually talk to a student that has gone through the CEO program, you know, they could be 16, 17 years old, and it's like they can shake your hand, they can maintain eye contact, they can make small talk, they're witty, they can engage in conversations, and they pick that up through the year-long program. And part of it's just, you know, we're putting them in close proximity with our key business leaders for our area. And that is going to rub off on them.
How much interest have you garnered? Obviously, the school districts are in. How much has the business community so far signed on to this?
We've seen a lot of support for it. We of course, always need more support. If anybody has a business and they want to engage with this program, we'd love to have them either as a mentor, as a site for the students to come tour, or as a financial sponsor for the program. But this program will be successful only if the rest of the community is engaged on it. And that's why we're kind of out telling the story. This is a big thing. This is really planting seeds for our community that are going to bear fruit down the road. It's a very important thing that we get going here.
All right, we're pretty much out of time. But if somebody has an interest, or a business leader listening has an interest in the CEO program, they should contact you.
Yeah, we'd love to talk with you. You can give us a call at 343-1194. We'll set up a time to come out and visit with you and tell you all about the program. It's really cool.
If anybody has any questions about what it is you do, they can call that number too, right?
Same thing. Yeah, we're always looking for input and feedback. 343-1194. Please reach out.
We could go on for hours. Ken Springer, president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development. However, we both have things to do today. So thanks so much for coming, and we'll have to have you back again soon.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.